Welcome to Managing Hodgkin Lymphoma. I am Dr. Anas Younes. Today, I will review immune therapy in Hodgkin lymphoma, the current and future approaches to treatment. In this presentation, I will review the rationale of targeting PD-1, PD-L1 in classical Hodgkin lymphoma, summarize the data on activity and safety profile in the treatment of relapsed and refractory classical Hodgkin lymphoma, and review ongoing prospective trials looking at combination therapy with brentuximab vedotin and future directions. So when we talk about immune therapy of Hodgkin lymphoma, and this is really applicable for all types of cancers, not unique for Hodgkin or non-Hodgkin lymphoma, we mainly talk about multiple platforms. One of them is immune checkpoint inhibitors, but there are other emerging platforms that are making news and demonstrating benefit to patients with Hodgkin lymphoma and other types of cancer. These are include the CAR T cells, these are engineered CAR T cells, the bispecific antibodies, antibody drug conjugates, an example is brentuximab vedotin, and naked antibodies, and of course, within the naked antibodies, the immune checkpoint inhibitors. But the focus today will be mainly on the immune checkpoint inhibitors, and we'll also talk about the brentuximab vedotin as the combination of these two strategies now showing interesting results. But when we talk about immune checkpoint inhibitors, we're mainly talking about ways or tricks to activate the patient's own immune cells, in this example, his own or her own T lymphocytes. T lymphocyte activation is regulated by a set of receptors that can trigger either activation or inactivation of T cells. These are normal for physiologic functions. So after, let's say, fighting in a pathogen or infection, T cells get activated. But after killing the offending pathogen, the T cells need to tone down their activation. And this is regulated by these sets of receptors. In this cartoon, the green ones are the activating receptors, and the red ones are the inactivating or inhibitory receptors. So if you want to activate T lymphocytes, you need to either use agonistic antibodies to activate the activating receptors, or blocking antibodies to block or inhibit the inhibitory receptors. And examples here is the antibodies targeting PD-1 like nivolumab or pembrolizumab. Both are blocking antibodies. Same thing for antibodies targeting CTLA-4. They are blocking antibodies. And you can see there is now a trend to combine more than one antibody, like a blocking antibody and activating antibody. And these are ongoing efforts in clinical trials. The only combination antibodies that are approved by regulatory agencies, including the FDA, are two blocking antibodies, one targeting PD-1 and the other one targeting CTLA-4. But there are more of these combinations being tested in context of clinical trials. So the story behind investigating the activity of PD-1, PD-L1 antibodies in Hodgkin lymphoma started in around 2008, where a Japanese group reported their observation that for some reason, Hodgkin lymphoma cell lines had a higher level of expression of a messenger RNA of PD-L1 and PD-L2, and a protein as detected by flow cytometry. Also, they could see that by immunohistochemical staining from primary Hodgkin lymphoma section, which is shown in the lower part of this slide. But they found that it didn't matter whether the disease expressed EBV or not, PD-L1 and PD-L2 expression were observed regardless of EBV infection status. And about a year later, the group from Boston, led by Margaret Shipp, linked the overexpression of PD-L1 and PD-L2 proteins to genetic abnormalities, which is an amplification of the amplicon 9P24.1. And in this amplicon, the genes for PDL1 and PDL2 and also JAK2 reside. So if you have amplification of this region, then you have an amplification of PDL1, PDL2 gene, and also JAK2. So if you have PDL1 increase in PDL1 copy numbers, as shown in the top part of this slide, in MLBCL, which is primary mediastinal large cell lymphoma, you can see there's about 3.8 copies of PDL1 gene, and therefore you have a nice expression of the protein PDL1 shown in the white histogram. Whereas in the common variety diffuse large B-cell lymphoma cell lines, you don't see amplification of PDL1 gene because in the copy number is ranging between 1.8 to 1.9, which is a normal two copies per cell, and you don't see much of a PDL1 expression. In contrast, what you see in the lower part of this slide, in Hodgkin lymphoma cell lines, you can see most of these cell lines have a high copy number of PDL1, ranging from 2.4 to 7.4 copies, and you can see there is association with high level of PDL1 expression on the surface, measured by flow cytometry. So now we have genetic explanation why the malignant Hodgkin and Reed-Sternberg cells express high levels of PDL1 and PDL2. This is mainly because they have an amplification in the 9P24 region that I just mentioned. So to put this together, now you can see in this cartoon, a Hodgkin lymphoma express now high levels of PDL1. They also express high levels of CD30. And presumably the target for PDL1 is PD1, which is presumably expressed on the infiltrating T lymphocytes in the microenvironment of Hodgkin lymphoma. The question was, would interruption of this interaction between PD1 and PDL1 lead to a therapeutic benefit? And the question was tested initially in two phase 1 trials. These phase 1 trials were multi-arm phase 1 trials that included non-Hodgkin lymphoma, Hodgkin lymphoma, multiple myeloma, myelodysplastic syndrome, and other hematologic malignancies, mainly looking for a therapeutic signal. And to everyone's pleasant surprise, the highest response rate was seen in the cohort of Hodgkin lymphoma. So what you can see here is a summary slide of two segments of a phase 1 trials, one with pembrolizumab and one with nivolumab. Each included about 29 or 23 patients, but the response rate in this relatively small cohorts was strikingly high. With Pembro was 66% response rate, and with Nivo was 87% response rate. Most responses were partial, few had complete responses, but this was like enough signal to get everyone excited. That led quickly to two pivotal trials, phase 2 trials, seeking registration by the FDA and other regulatory agencies. And these phase 2 trials also included multiple cohorts looking at different clinical scenarios. First one with nivolumab, which is called CheckMate 205, included three different cohorts. All cohorts required to have failure after autologous transplant, but cohort B, which led to the initial approval, required patients to fail both autologous transplant and brentuximab vedotin. Eventually, the other cohorts also showed similar responses. Pembrolizumab also was conducted in a phase 2 trial with multiple cohorts. Different clinical scenarios. One of them also included patients who failed both autologous transplant and brentuximab vedotin. The bottom line, if you look at the activity of these agents in similar cohorts, and in this example here, we're showing you responses in patients who failed both autologous transplant and brentuximab vedotin. You can see with Pembro, there were 69 patients treated, and with nivolumab, there was 80 patients treated. The overall response rate was 72 and 66%, very similar. And the complete response rate was 21 and 9% respectively with these two agents. You really should not compare these results head-to-head, especially CR rate, because this could be probably under estimation, because these agents can induce a local inflammation that may give you false positive PET scan, and we're using PET scan to determine CR in these patients. But the bottom line, you can achieve a high response rate regardless whether you use Pembro or Nivo, and the CR rate relatively low with both agents. And the same thing if you look at a different cohort, now looking at patients who failed autologous transplant but had no prior brentuximab vedotin. With Pembro, 60 patients treated, and with Nivo, 63 patients treated. Overall response rate almost identical, 67% and 68%, and the CR rate almost identical, 21 and 22%. So regardless whether you have brentuximab or no brentuximab, if you fail autologous transplant, you have a response rate in the neighborhood of 60 to 70%. What's also interesting that these responses are durable. We've seen data with brentuximab vedotin. If you achieve a complete response, you can have a durable response duration. But if you don't achieve a CR with brentuximab vedotin, even partial remission, the median duration of response is measured in a few months, about 4 to 5 months. Here with checkpoint inhibitors, in this example, is nivolumab, but the same story with pembrolizumab. Even if you achieve a partial remission or even a stable disease, you can have a good duration of response, sometimes exceeding a year, which is good to remember, because even a stable disease, which is technically minor response, can give the patients good mileage in terms of time to progression. So now we have a checkpoint inhibitors, Pembro and Nivo, both give you about 60 to 70% response rate. And we previously had brentuximab vedotin, which was the first drug approved by the FDA for relapsed Hodgkin lymphoma, with a response rate also about 75% response rate. And everybody wants to see these agents combined because, one, you can combine them at full doses without overlapping toxicity, and B, they have different mechanisms of action. So the question, if we combine both of them, would we get a higher response rate or longer duration of response? So to answer this question, the group from City of Hope led a multi-center trial that did this combination trial. Brentuximab vedotin plus nivolumab, but as salvage therapy before autologous transplant. In this trial, patients were treated with four doses of these two drugs, and if you respond, you can go to autologous transplant. So this trial can give you an idea about the response rate, but unfortunately doesn't give you an idea about the median time to progression, because patients who responded were then offered autologous transplant. But regardless, the data, it was very impressive. The overall response rate was 85%, and the complete response rate is 63%, which is higher than what we've seen with each drug alone, higher than what we've seen with brentuximab vedotin, because the CR rate is about 35%, and higher than what we've seen with Pembro or Nivo, with the CR rate ranging between 12 to 20-21% response rate. So that's really created a lot of excitement. And based on this data, there's now an international randomized trial comparing brentuximab alone with brentuximab plus nivolumab in patients failing after autologous transplant. Another question that came up, that what about PD-L1 antibodies? We know that PD-L1 antibodies have been approved for several solid tumor indications. Can we use PD-1 and PD-L1 antibodies interchangeably in Hodgkin lymphoma? The reason why this question was important, because Hodgkin lymphoma, as I mentioned before, express both PD-L1 and PD-L2 because of the genetic amplification. So there was concern that if you block PD-L1 alone, PD-L2 may compensate, and then therefore PD-L1 targeted agents may not be as effective. A phase 1 trial was conducted, reported about a year ago by Robert Chen from City of Hope. It was a multi-center trial, and this is the gist of the trial. It's a phase 1 trial, so it's multi-dose escalation. But it was very interesting to see that majority of patients had some responses seen in this waterfall plot. So what we know from this trial, that PD-L2 may not completely compensate for PD-L1. We don't know what the exact overall response rate, because it's a phase 1 trial. We don't know the phase 2 data yet. But it's interesting to know, at least, that at least if you block PD-L1 alone, you can still see good response rate in patients with Hodgkin lymphoma. But keep in mind, PD-L1 targeted agents are not approved for Hodgkin lymphoma at the present time. Another question came up that with the Echelon 1 trial, which combined brentuximab vedotin plus ABVD or AVD in newly diagnosed patients, can we or should we combine checkpoint inhibitors with ABVD or AVD in newly diagnosed patients? And what is the safety in these patients? What's the efficacy? And again, there's a cohort in this CheckMate 205. It's called Cohort D, which included patients with newly diagnosed classical Hodgkin lymphoma. It had a window at design, meaning that the patients received nivolumab for 2 months, four doses, before they started chemotherapy. And after four doses of nivolumab, they received the concurrent AVD plus nivolumab for the six cycles, and then the patients were followed up. There's no maintenance strategy whatsoever. And this is the data which was published last ASH meeting. If you look at the end of monotherapy, nivolumab alone, four doses, which is shown on the left side of this slide, you can see that the overall response rate was about 70, almost 70%. Most responses were also partial, which is shown in the red color, and in the blue color were its CRs. So as single agent in newly diagnosed, untreated patients with classical Hodgkin lymphoma, four doses produced same response rate as what we've seen in patients who failed autologous transplant and the patient who failed both autologous transplant and brentuximab vedotin. Now, when you combine both AVD and brentuximab vedotin, you can see at the end of therapy, at the end of six cycles of AVD plus nivolumab, the response rate now goes up to 84%, with the majority of responses being complete responses, about 70% complete responses. My question, what to do with this data? And this is the waterfall plot from this data. Almost all patients responded, which is not surprising. There are now trials looking at the combination of these agents, Pembro or Nivo, with the AVD or ABVD, and there may be plans to do a randomized trial to see if this could be adds value over brentuximab AVD, or maybe even could be considered in the future to be compared head to head with the Echelon 1 data. But this is an ongoing discussion at this present time. Side effects of checkpoint inhibitors is same thing like what's been reported in any other cancers, including solid tumors. There is class effect here for PD-1 targeted agents. Mainly at grade 1 and grade 2, fever, diarrhea, neutropenia, fatigue, cough. Hypothyroidism is seen in about 7% or so, sometimes skin rash, some nausea. What we mainly are concerned about, what we call the itis, hepatitis, pneumonitis, colitis. These are typically rare, the grade 3 and 4, less than 2 to 3% usually. But those require usually steroid administration, dose interruption, and sometimes dose termination if they are severe or recurrent side effects. One should be aware of these side effects when using checkpoint inhibitors. So conclusions, antibodies targeting PD-1 demonstrated significant clinical activity in Hodgkin lymphoma, leading to regulatory approval of both nivolumab and pembrolizumab. Anti-PD-1, PD-L1 antibodies have modest single-agent activity in non-Hodgkin lymphoma. We didn't talk about that, and therefore multiple combination strategies are now being investigated. So none of these agents have been approved for non-Hodgkin lymphoma. The approval right now only for classical Hodgkin lymphoma. The role of immune checkpoint inhibitors in eradicating minimal residual disease or circulating tumor DNA in both Hodgkin lymphoma and non-Hodgkin lymphoma being investigated. Again, we didn't have much time to talk about this, but there's a lot of interest in looking at the value of adding a checkpoint inhibitors to frontline regimens as a concurrent administration, AVD plus nivolumab, I mentioned that. There's trials combining that with R-CHOP, for example, and G-bendamustine for non-Hodgkin low-grade B-cell lymphomas, plus maintenance strategies, looking at the effect of these agents on circulating tumor DNA in both Hodgkin and non-Hodgkin lymphomas and also in solid tumors. With this, I thank you for watching this program.